Bob McCallum podcast, of course, featuring John Shen on the air, for lack of a better term. Can you still say on the air when you're?
Yeah, because we're on the air on Sirius podcast? XM. We're on satellite radio on Sirius XM.
Yeah, I guess that's about as airy as you can get, isn't it?
I
the dissemination
put
of the signal
way,
is from a higher point.
That's right.
Than a
terrestrial. And it seems to find my car every day. So.
Well, we're happy that at least there's an audience of one. We're going to talk about the Canadian Football League a little bit, but more significantly, we're going to talk to Bob Irving of CJOB in Winnipeg, who will call the last of his more than 800 CFL games, 40 plus years. He's going to retire at age 71. And here's a guy who is, legendary in the West, but maybe more importantly, has watched this league for almost a half a century. And I'm intrigued by what he thinks of it and where it's going and what you might or might not do with it. So that's what we're going to do today.
Yeah. Bob's a very interesting guy. I got a chance to work with Bob for 4 years. There's nobody more passionate and understanding of the complexities of the Canadian Football League. And you're right about it. This guy's a legend. An absolute legend in Winnipeg, and probably has not received enough national acclaim for the quality broadcaster that he is.
We'll talk to Bob Irving when the podcast and radio program continues after these messages. McCown and Shannon back with you again. We are joined by a legend. I was going to say Western Canada legend, but that would be limiting. And
CFL,
unfair.
A CFL legend.
Oh, that's more accurate. Bob Irving has been calling Winnipeg Blue Bombers games since 1974 and is about to call, allegedly, his last game this Sunday when the Bombers play Saskatchewan in the Western Final. We congratulate you on an extraordinary career and longevity, but you're bailing like 3 years away from 50.
I know.
Did you think about that?
or do you want to change your, do you want to right here on the podcast, change
your
mind and say you're not going to retire?
No, I don't want to do that. And I haven't thought a lot about it. Other people have. As a matter of fact, a lot of people have said to me, why didn't you stick around for 50 years? But that never entered into my thought process. However many years I've been doing it is quite long enough. I think it's time for me to ride off into the sunset. You know, they've always say, when it's time to retire, you'll know it. And I know it. It became obvious to me earlier this year that as much as I still love doing what I'm doing, I don't have the energy, the desire to keep doing it. My wife and I have other things we want to do with our summers because I've never had a summer to myself. And I don't want that to sound like I'm complaining. I'm not, because I've loved every minute of covering the Bombers. But it's just time. It's time to move on and leave it all behind.
Well, let me say this, as a couple of guys who have gone through the quote unquote retirement thing, although not as voluntarily as you are.
Right. Yeah.
One of the dilemmas you face is, you know, you get to the point like you seem to be at where you're frustrated and not as enthusiastic as you used to be, which is natural. And then you figure, okay, I'm going to ride off into the sunset and do all these other things. And then you start waking up every morning and going, well, I haven't got anything to do. And you wonder about, you know, did I make the right decision? I assume you've thought about all this stuff, right?
Oh, sure I have. Yeah. And I think one of the benefits I've had is in the last 6 years, I've had the winters off. I've covered football in the summer, but as soon as the Grey Cup is over, I don't come back to work again until May when training camp opens. So, you know, I've had six idle months for the last 6 years every year. To see how, you know, what it's like to not be working. And as I tell people, I'm pretty good at doing nothing. And so it's worked out pretty well. Now, the summer's a different story. I like to play golf, so I expect I'll play more golf than I have. Will I miss it? Yes, I will. And I don't think I'll know how much I'll miss it until training camp rolls around next May and the Bombers start playing games. And how I'm going to feel then, I don't know, Bob. I really don't. But I'm prepared to deal with it, whatever it is.
So I've never really asked you this question. when you put the headset on, what's it like to call a game? And awesome. what kind of rush do you get doing it?
Well, it's hard to explain the rush, John, but there's nothing like it. There's no feeling like doing play-by-play, in my opinion. And I've done everything in this business. I've hosted Open Line. You know, I've read sportscasts for 40 years, and I enjoy all that. But when you put that headset on and do play-by-play, you feel like you're part of the game. You really do. And I think that's as close as you can ever get to being part of the game. So it's an indescribably exciting feeling to be describing the game and knowing that however many thousands of people are out there waiting for you to tell them what's going on. That's really a cool feeling. And you only get that doing play-by-play. And so, yeah, you're in your own little world, especially with radio play-by-play, because mm-hmm. you're painting pictures for people, as the TV's different because the pictures tell the story, but you're telling the whole story. And so it's really a special period. That 3 hours of the game is a real cool period.
And why football and not hockey or baseball?
Well, I just fell into football. You know, when I came to CJOB, we had an opening to do the football games, and it wasn't because I was any more particularly interested in football and hockey or anything else. And I did some hockey games back in the World Hockey Association days, and even in the NHL when our guys got sick or couldn't travel or whatever. So I've done both, but the football assignment just came my way. And, you know, I've loved every minute of it.
Where did the nickname Knuckles come from?
White knuckle flyers. I'm a fearful flyer. So I was sitting on a plane back in the mid 70s, and Cactus Jack Wells, one of the broadcast legends of all time in Canada, was part of our football crew, and we're traveling together. And I was squeezing the arm of my seat quite tight as we were taking off, and my knuckles got white. You don't hear the term much anymore about white knuckle flyers, but I was one of them. And Jack noticed that, and he said, "Oh, Knuckles, eh?" And that, so then when Cactus gives you a nickname, it sticks forever, and he's the guy who gave it to me. And a lot of people have known me as Knuckles, and that's where it came from. You know, I often get people saying, "Did you get that because you got in a fight with somebody?" Or no, yeah. I got it because I'm a white knuckle flyer.
Bob, I can having worked with Bob for 4 years, I can attest to yes, my friend as being the, you know, he had to be near the front of the plane, yeah. On the aisle. Yeah. You might have had a few lubricants with you just to relax
yeah.
you.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. You know, and it hasn't changed. It hasn't gotten any easier. I know.
Really?
I remember the stories about Wayne Gretzky, who didn't like flying, and then he just eventually overcame it. Well, I've never been able to overcome it. I still have it as acutely as ever, maybe even more so. And I'm certainly not going to miss the 18 flights that I've had to take every summer when I'm retired.
I've had the same. I've gone through the same thing. Not enjoying flying. I used to fly a lot and never bothered me at all. And then all of a sudden, I got this anxiety of flying. I'm interested. You like to be on the aisle. I always want to be on the window. It's like, wow. If I can look outside,
yeah,
I feel like I have more control.
Yeah. It's weird, you know, when you talk to people about these sort of issues you have with flying. And Bob, I used to like the aisle, as John said, but I prefer the window now too, and I don't know why. I somehow feel kind of more secure in there as opposed to being out exposed on the aisle. Isn't that strange? I mean, I don't know how you rationalize any of this stuff.
Oh, I don't know either.
I prefer it there. Yeah, it's just crazy. And as John said, the lubricants are, they're essential. They're essential.
Well, you know, you're going to have time to yourself, and I guess you'll be, you have plans in retirement to do some traveling.
Yeah.
You know, so the lubricants will still have to be at hand, I guess, huh?
Well, we'll travel for sure, but it won't be, you know, every 2 weeks in the summer.
I get it.
It'll be selected, sure. in the fall or the spring or whatever. And we can always drive. We'll have lots of time to drive wherever we're going in North America. And I've coped with the flying problem for years because I had to do the job that I do. So you just deal with it, right? And I'll deal with it going forward whenever we decide to travel. It's certainly not going to stop me. It never has. And I don't think it ever will.
You know, you mentioned Cactus Jack Wells, and it tweaked me to something. And I think we've had this discussion over the years at times, is there is something about broadcasting in Winnipeg. There is a real culture to it. Legends stay around in Winnipeg. And there's a real contribution of Winnipeg broadcasters to the national stage you think about it. With our old friend Don Whitman, Mansbridge, got his start in Manitoba and in Winnipeg. What is it about Winnipeg and broadcasting? What do you hear or see or feel about the city? And because some people migrate to Vancouver, some people to Toronto, but people in Winnipeg kind of stay in Winnipeg.
Yeah. Well, that's because people who stay in Winnipeg realize what a great place it is. And from the outside, I know it doesn't look that way. And the perception of our city is not very good. I've heard that over the years when I've traveled across the country. And I get it, I guess. But and Brian Williams, I think, has some roots in Winnipeg, too, John. All kinds of people from here. Don Whitman, one of the greats of all time. Bob Picken, who worked at CBC for years. And Bob is a terrific broadcaster. I guess I would say this, and I should be on the Chamber of Commerce in Winnipeg. Once you settle in here and find out all the great things about the city, the culture that we have, the great lake country we have within an hour or 90 minutes of this city, it's just a hard place to leave. It really is. And I know that's probably hard for some people to believe, but I think all those other guys, and some of them did leave for sure, but a lot of them stayed here too. Cactus and Jack Matheson, who was with the Winnipeg Tribune, one of the great columnists in the history of Winnipeg, of Canadian sports writing. They all stayed here because it's a wonderful place to live and raise a family. And that's kind of the way we've looked at it.
Well, and we better throw in Scott Oak there because I don't want to get a phone call this afternoon.
Scott. Scott's never been tempted to leave. He's like all the rest of us who, set down roots here. It's a great place to be.
But is it a competitive broadcast town? I mean, Vancouver is a cutthroat town. Yeah. Toronto is a cutthroat town. Is it competitive in Winnipeg?
Well, it's competitive, but it's friendly competitive. And that's one of the great things too. I've always said this. Even on the football beat and the hockey guys, I know all of them well. We all get along, and we all want to break the story and everything else, but nobody has an inflated ego of any kind, and we all just sort of get along. We sometimes travel together, rent cars together, go out for dinner together. I can't recall any significant animosity between reporters in this city over anything in all the years I've been here, and I know that's unusual. I know it's different in Toronto and Vancouver for sure. Yeah. But it's been great here. And that's, again, for somebody in my business, that's a pleasing thing because you don't want to have to go to work every day and not want to look at the guy who's standing next to you and covering the beat. I mean, that's not a fun thing to do. So, no, it's been great that way.
A testament to, your suggestion that Winnipeg grows on you. I recall when the Jets went back to Winnipeg, there was, and I remember reporting on it, all kinds of stories about players who were very unhappy with going to Winnipeg and quietly and sometimes not so quietly suggested, well, get me out of here. I don't want to be in Winnipeg. And that has completely disappeared. And it disappeared actually very quickly after it started. So there's some testament to what you're talking about.
Well, guys like Ty Domi, Bob, and Chris King and Eddie Olczyk, they all came here via trade and they speak glowingly about Winnipeg now. And that's exactly what happens when athletes come here. Look at the Jets right now. They've signed a ton of their guys to long-term deals.
Exactly.
Money has something to do with that. But if they were miserable here, they wouldn't have signed here. There's no reason to. So, no, I think they're maybe the best example of people coming here, spending time here, and then realizing it's a pretty good place.
Heck, Paul Stastny's come back twice. When you think about it, that is a real testament.
Sure. Yeah.
I want to talk a little bit about, the history of the Bombers, but also the history of the CFL and where it's going. And I can't think of anybody better to address this with. We'll take a quick break and come back with more. Bob Irving joins us today on the show. Back after these messages. Bob Irving retiring after 47 years.
Yeah, that sounds about right. Yeah.
Bomber games.
Sounds about right. I don't know.
I guess you get to the point where, a year or two here or there.
Hold on. Now, Bob's the play-by-play guy. If he says, is that a 9-yard gain or a 6-yard gain? Well, that sounds about right. Come on now.
Well,
you're an exacting guy, Bob.
Yeah, but the years run together. I came here in September of 73, so you go ahead and do the math. You know, it's fairly simple, I think.
Well, exactly the same year that I got into broadcasting, too, interestingly. Not of any consequence. So you've seen ups and downs in this league. You've even seen ups and downs in Winnipeg. Mm-hmm. In terms of, there have been occasions, not many, when the future of the franchise and the league have been, a story, whether it's a serious story or not. Did you ever feel that that the team may not survive?
No, I never felt that way, Bob, and I never felt that way about the league. And look, I've seen this league be on death's door, people predicting its demise within a matter of minutes or months or whatever. And this league has gone through some major troubles. I remember when they had telethons in Regina to keep the Rough Riders alive.
You bet.
And the Bombers in the late 90s were really, really financially in trouble, more than people know. But there was always a feeling that something would happen in this community to ride to the rescue of the team, whether it was the provincial government would come forward with some help or whatever, some philanthropic citizens. There was always somebody who'd step in and move it forward and eliminate the financial stress it was under. So no, there was never a moment. This team is woven too deeply into the fabric of this community. It's been here since 1930. Nobody's ever going to let it die. The same in Saskatchewan. I think the same in Edmonton for all the troubles they're having now. Calgary now. I know Toronto's a different matter altogether, and I don't have any answers for Toronto. I watch what goes on there every year, and I don't know what the solution is there. I just don't. But in terms of Winnipeg and the league, you couldn't kill the CFL if you tried. I think it's one of those things that is always going to find a way to survive whatever problem. And the pandemic has dealt a horrible blow to the league. The money that the teams lost in 2020 was $4, 5, 6, 7 million. And I don't know how they survive it, but they do. And they played this year. They're going to play again next year. So for all its ups and downs, I take this from the desiderata, from all its sham, drudgery, and broken dreams, the Canadian Football League is still a beautiful thing. That's the way I see it.
Well, you talked about Toronto, and not to make this a Toronto-centric conversation, I don't want to put you on the spot there, but of course there's almost inevitably, as a season comes to conclusion, there's the debate in the media. Like, what are you going to do? How is this thing fixed? And look, Toronto has had some deep-pocketed ownership. Mm-hmm. They've had a lot of guys who have spent a lot of money and lost a lot of money.
Yeah.
And now with MLSE controlling the club, it was assumed that, okay, everything is solved now. They've got so many positive assets, so much positive cash flow, that if they lose $5 or even $10 million in a year on the Argonauts, not really going to mean all that much. And yet that conversation is now being had once again right now. Here's the $1 million question. I know you've been asked this. I've been asked this.
Yeah,
more than a few times. Could this league survive without the Toronto franchise?
No, I don't think so. I don't, from a just a marketing perspective and a corporate sponsorship perspective, I don't think that's a non-starter for me. I think the other teams would still draw their fan base and survive in their particular markets, but as a league overall, I don't think that's an answer at all. You mentioned Maple Leaf Sports and Entertainment, Bob. From everything I've heard and seen when I've been in Toronto, they have not invested much in terms of promoting and marketing the team. If they have, I haven't seen it. It's almost like they treat it as a lost leader. Like a lot of people, I thought the move to BMO Field would be the salvation. And now I wonder if they wouldn't have been better off staying in Rogers Centre, which I know they can't go back to. So it's a conundrum for the league. you know, it's just frustrating to think that they can't somehow attract 20,000 people to all of their games, given the population base there. And again, I just throw my hands up and say, I have no idea what the solution is. And if Maple Leaf Sports and Entertainment decides to give up ownership of the team, I don't know where they turn. But back to your question, can the league survive without a franchise in Toronto? I'm not sure. I don't think so.
Do you think that that's the biggest issue facing the league? I mean, we've been through lots, Bob, over the years with the CFL. Montreal's not in great shape. I know they have new ownership in Vancouver, which is a real positive. Edmonton seems to be in shambles right now, but is that an anomaly? Or what are the other issues do you think the CFL is having right now?
Well, I think Edmonton is an anomaly. The fans are there. They'll get them back once they get their organization straightened around it. The new owner in Vancouver is as good an owner as they could have found. He's a local guy. He loves the game. He's been a fan forever. He's super rich, and he's committed. I don't know.
He's going to need to be.
Yeah, no, that's right. Yeah, I don't know about the Montreal group. You know, they sound, when they talk, they sound like they're committed. And, you know, I think if they put a good product on the field there, they'll be okay. Ottawa and Hamilton, I think, are fairly strong now in terms of ownership. I know Ottawa had a miserable year and attendance was down, but, you know, I think it's there in Ottawa. So now we come back to Toronto, and I just don't know what the future holds, and you know what could happen. What could happen in Toronto to make things different? I don't have any answers to
that. No one does, Bob.
No, I know. Yeah, and they had a successful year this year in terms of winning and losing. I don't know if the product was great because they have a team that's really erratic, but they're kind of fun to watch too. So I don't know what to tell you about Toronto. It's been the one sort of black cloud hanging over this league on a consistent basis for as long as I remember back in the 80s coming into for games with the Bombers at Exhibition Stadium. It was packed, 30-some thousand people.
Yep.
Even in the Candy McNall Gretzky days in the late 90s, they had over 30,000 at Rogers Center, Sky Dome then, for their games. And but it's gotten lost now. And so I don't know what.
So when you started, I think, and if we had a couple of beverages, you and I could sit across the table even today and name the starting nine quarterbacks for the nine teams in the CFL, because they were big names and they were stars in our league.
Yeah,
that's not the case anymore. Or is it? Am I missing something?
Well, it's the case in Winnipeg, and it's the case in Saskatchewan, and in Calgary and Edmonton to a lesser extent. I mean, Mike Riley and Bo Levi Mitchell, and Edmonton had a mess this year. Zach Collaros here. Yeah. You know, I think that, you know, we've still got a lot of star players in the Canadian Football League. And, you know, the fans who follow the league closely know who the great players and the star players are. I think, John, you're referencing, you know, various times when, you know, the Matt Dunnigans of the world played for 16 years and that kind of thing. Sure. And so we knew them from year to year to year to year to year. It's become a little more nomadic, but there are still established stars in this league. And those of us in football hotbeds, Canadian football hotbeds, know who they are. It's different in Toronto. I know that. Yeah. You know, there's so many options there and so many things that grab your attention, the Leafs and the Raptors and the Blue Jays and all the rest of it. And then the Argos.
And the soccer team. Don't forget the soccer team.
Yeah, no, that's so right. And the Argos kind of get lost in the shuffle. But outside of that market, you know, I think there's still, they had the ratings for the Saskatchewan-Calgary playoff game were over a million. It was the most watched sporting event of the weekend, I guess. And so, and I know it's a playoff game and it should have decent numbers, but, you know, the fans are still there. There's still enough fans out there to make this thing work. And they tell me the ratings in Toronto, the TV ratings are always pretty good.
They're always good. Yeah, they're always good, Bob. Yeah, that's right. So, that's right.
I don't know.
Well, I listened to a conversation quite by accident on the radio not so long ago. And this was the debate, as we have almost every year. Like, what do you do with the Canadian Football League? And they got into the notion of, do you finally abandon the uniqueness of the Canadian Football League, the three downs, the bigger field? Do you finally go to a U.S. style game, four downs, 100-yard field, you know, what we see in college football in the U.S., what we see in the NFL in the U.S. And the response of the person who was being interviewed immediately was, no, heck no, you got to keep the Canadian Football League unique and this, that, and the other thing. And I started thinking about it. And I thought, well, is that just being stubborn? Or if there was a fundamental change in the field, the rules, could it help this league? What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I don't believe that for a minute, Bob. And I'm old school in that regard, and I'll state that up front. I think one of the reasons the Canadian Football League survived is because the game is so unique and so special. I mean, they've eliminated kick returns in the National Football League. Kick returns are one of the most exciting plays in all of football, and we still have them in the CFL. You know, you go to four downs, now you've got a cheap imitation of the National Football League, in my opinion. I think we have to keep the uniqueness of our game, the wider field, you know, the rouge. I love the rouge. Don't take it away. I don't think if you eliminated the rouge and went to four downs, would you attract more fans to BMO Field? I don't believe that for a minute. You know, and I understand that conversation takes place. I get it. Because we sort of everything in football you compare to the National Football League, which is the, you know, the big beast in all of sports. Sure. It's the most successful sports league in the world. And so you, any other sport, football league pales in comparison to the NFL. But no, I think we've got to keep our game, our game. I really do. And I know there are some people in the league who would like to see, Bob, some of the changes you're talking about. There's a move afoot, and I don't know how strong it is or whether or not it's going to move forward and change the game dramatically, but I think that's a mistake. I really do. I think you're going down the wrong path if you do that.
Well, I follow what you're saying, and I don't necessarily disagree. It's just, you know, there's a philosophy, you know, if you keep doing the same thing over and over again and it doesn't work,
yeah,
and you don't change, you're doing nothing but being stubborn. And I don't know to what degree change should be made, but gosh, you just have, you can't go through this every year, year after year after year with franchises losing money, having to change ownership. Like we've talked, Montreal's in rough shape, Ottawa, at least temporarily, the Argonauts are a complete mess. BC doesn't draw to the point where they're profitable. Edmonton's kind of, you know, and I know
it had a bad year. Edmonton
had a bad year. But well, the that's pandemic, 5 of 8.
Yeah, the pandemic has played a role in this too.
Well, I get it.
Yeah, let's not forget that. It dealt the league, because I remember at the end of 2019, at the end of that Grey Cup game, things looked pretty rosy for the CFL. They really did, in terms of, now you always, when things look rosy for the CFL, you got to keep that in context, because that's, you know, it's never like teams are going to make millions of dollars. So I think the pandemic has really set them back. I just don't think that changing the product on the field would you know, improve some of the things you're talking about. I think those are different issues than the product on the field. And the product this year wasn't great. It really wasn't. There were no preseason games, and I think that hurt the teams in terms of their preparation. The scoring was down. There were a lot of games that weren't as entertaining as CFL games normally are. And I think to some degree that's cyclical too. So I just think the product is what you've got to base everything on. And then your marketing and your connection to communities and all the rest of it has to get better as you move forward. I would also like to see the CFL on more than one television network. I think it's a mistake to be on one network. TSN gives them the money, and so they have all their games on there. I think if you're on CTV Sportsnet, you would get more attention. You would get more coverage. And it would help you. I mean, the National Football League has its games on what, 5 networks? They don't mess around and give the product to one network. I think that's a problem in the CFL, but that's not going to change because TSN has a long-term deal to do the games.
No, exactly.
And they're not going to give any games to anybody else.
So I was curious, when you were talking about not changing much, I can only imagine your thought when there was discussion of merging with the XFL.
Oh, yeah. So nobody could explain to me how that was going to benefit the Canadian Football League, how it was going to draw more fans in Toronto. Like if the Toronto team was part of an XFL with some teams in the US, would that make people in Southern Ontario more likely to go to an Argo game? Nobody was able to explain to me how that would work. How would the CFL benefit from this connection with a league that really doesn't even exist? in name only, in concept only, it would serve to help the XFL, I guess, gain some credibility, although the XFL is in the U.S. and nobody in the U.S. gives a rip about what's going on in Canada in football, right? So I just, nobody could tell me specifically how this was going to help the Canadian football, and they still haven't been able to, and I know there's still some talk behind the scenes about it, but I don't get it. I just don't get it.
XFL situation obviously harkens back to, and we all remember this. I mean, I was at the first CFL game in the U.S. in Sacramento, California. And, you know,
how did that work out?
Well, you know, Baltimore won a championship. And, you know, we had teams in the CFL teams in the Deep South. You don't want to go back to that. And the XFL seemed to be kind of a hybrid of what we went through back in those days, wasn't it?
Yeah, exactly. And that was, I mean, the U.S. expansion was a colossal disaster. It just was in every way. I mean, the idea was to get these expansion fees from the American teams. Well, half of them never paid a nickel.
That's the problem.
Yeah. So, you know, it was, here's what I would say about that. Focus on, and when they expanded to the U.S., my thought was, focus on the markets in Canada, where the problems are. That's where you need to focus and spend your resources and do your groundwork and whatever needs to be done. Find new owners. I don't know, but do it in Canada. This is our game, our league. Get your solutions up here. They're not in the U.S. The solutions aren't in the United States. The Americans know NFL, college football, high school football on Friday night. That's the football Americans know. It's the only football they'll ever know. And so any connection we have to the U.S. to me doesn't benefit the CFL one little bit. That's my view, and it'll never change.
Let me throw one more thing out at you two guys. We all lived through an era where the Canadian Football League could attract high-quality players, players who could have been stars in the National Football League, many of whom were. You know, in the 70s, the Argos had Corrigal and Stillwagon and Joe Theismann and high draft choices from the National Football League. And they could compete for those players because of the economics. They could pay them as much or more than they would make in the U.S. Well, those days are long gone.
Yep.
And so now we have this situation where you have, I was going to say a limited number of Americans, but essentially it's a limited number of Canadians who play in this league. And there are many who propose, let's limit the number of Canadian players. Let's add more American players. But these aren't the American players, the stars that we once had. These are just guys. What about the notion of making this actually a Canadian game and limiting the number of imports? Like going the exact opposite direction. What do you think about that?
No, I don't like that either, Bob. I think, and you know, there was talk the last couple of years about reducing the number of Canadians on the rosters. And look, the Canadian Football League has given 200 Canadians every year a chance to play professional football in our country because it legislates that you have to have 20 Canadians on your roster.
Yeah.
And I think that's a great thing. I think that's one of the great things about the Canadian Football League. It allows kids in college in Canada who don't have the same development curve that they have in the U.S. to get on rosters here, and like Andrew Harris and Pat Neufeld, one of our offensive linemen who's become as good as any American because he's had a chance, because he's Canadian, to play the game and then develop his skills, which, you know, were way behind the Americans in skill development in high school and college. So, no, I don't like that idea at all. I think we, in terms of more Canadians, no, there's just not, we don't have enough. We don't have enough. Now I think you would see the product diminish because I think the Americans who come up here are still terrific athletes. Some of them are not quite fast enough, not quite big enough to play in the National Football League, but they're still terrific athletes. And so again, I go back to the product. I think the product, the talent of the players we have up here is very good. No, the biggest, best and fastest players in the world are in the National Football League. We all know that.
Yeah.
But our athletes are good too. And they're unique. A lot of them in their ways. We have a linebacker here, Adam Big Hill, who played 1 year in New Orleans and he wasn't good enough to be a starter and a frontline guy. He's good enough to make their team. But he's just not quite there right at the National Football League level, but he's still a terrific football player. And we love watching him here in Winnipeg. He's a great talent. And so, again, I always revert to the product. I think the product's fine. We don't need to change the ratio. We don't need to change. There's lots of good football players out there, and they can't all play in the National Football League. And so we get the best of the not very best, which is fine. It's always been that way. Now, you go back to the, I go back to the 50s, Bob. They could pay the Americans more than the National Football League did. But as you said, now this economic scale is just so dramatically different that, you know, it is what it is, right?
But here's what's got to happen. And I know we had Randy on earlier this year and we talked about it, and it's happened to a limited extent. But a guy like Big Hill's a good example. If Adam Big Hill, if he likes playing in Winnipeg that much, after 3 or 4 years, he should become a non-import. He should be rewarded for staying in Canada and allowing, I mean, because that's how guys, when we were kids, in the end, Angelo Mosca, who just passed away, the great, late, great Angelo Mosca, was in the end deemed a non-import. Ronnie Lancaster was deemed a non-import. And they stayed and contributed and made the game and the league better. Yeah. And that has to happen. We have to reward the Americans who come here and stay, because that helps. I mean, the transient nature of the CFL is the thing that bothers me more than anything.
I agree.
I mean, I don't want to see a quarterback play for all 9 teams in 7 years. And that happens.
Well, okay. No, it does happen. One of the problems is a couple of years ago when they did the CBA, they went to 1-year contracts without an option. And so at the end of every year, everybody's a free agent. And now the Bombers have probably 10 players who've been here 5 years or more. And, you know, the CFL is not the only transient league in the world. I mean, players move around. Name me look at an NHL roster, John, from 4 or 5 years ago, and tell me a lot of the teams, how many of the players are still there? Not very many.
But there's a core. I can be sold on a core.
Yeah. Well, there's a core here. There's a core in Saskatchewan. So I understand what you're saying, but in terms of, now, did Randy agree that if an American's been here a few years, he should become a Canadian? So now you're eliminating a Canadian job, right? That's what you're doing. You're eliminating a Canadian player from being on the roster. So I'll never sign up for that. Now, if Randy thinks and the rest of the league think that's the way to go, good for them. But you're talking to a guy who doesn't agree with that. All right. I just don't.
Well, fair enough. Fair enough. But I mean, I proposed a few minutes ago, you know, increasing the number of Canadians on the roster. Or and then John has now said, you know, said, well, let's go back to the naturalized Canadian kind of thing.
Yeah.
I say, leave it alone. Just leave it alone.
That's respectfully, I understand your position. And it's a position that most people who love the Canadian Football League have.
Yeah.
And yet, out of the other side of their mouth, they have to acknowledge that this is a league that is teetering on the brink all the time, and to not make change just doesn't make any sense to me. You got to do something.
Yeah.
Well, and it maybe it doesn't have to be dramatic.
Yeah.
But, and I think you would acknowledge this too yourself. One of the reasons we watch sports and fall in love with sports and teams is because of the familiarity with the athlete. Mm-hmm. We like to see him develop. We want to be able to relate back to what he was 2 or 3 years ago.
That's it.
And that level of consistency is, you know, something we grew up with, you know, before free agency happened in any of sports. Mm-hmm. And to some extent, that's never going to come back. But why not push to allow you to keep the guys that you have?
Yeah, and I would argue that in a lot of the franchises that happens. And certainly this one here, they're able to keep a core of players. You know, Mike Riley, Bo Levi Mitchell, they've been in this league for 10 years. And yeah, Mike's been with 2 teams now. Bo's been with Calgary his entire career. And, you know, you can say those are exceptions, but it still happens in this league. Hamilton's had a core of players there for 3 or 4 years now. I just think for the transient nature of athletes in all sports, and I'm looking at the Blue Jays losing Simeon and their pitcher Ray to free agency. This is what sports is nowadays. Where the money is. And it's not just the CFL. It really isn't. No. And I know that's always been the label about the league, but it's true, I think, of all sports. And Bob, in terms of the CFL sort of teetering on the brink and lurching from pillar to post, I've covered the league for 50 years, and that's always been the case in the Canadian.
Well, that's what I'm acknowledging.
Yeah, and it always will be, because the the economics don't allow this league simply because of the nature of it to be outrageously successful. And you know what? I'm good with that. Let's keep lurching and staggering and moving forward. And 50 years from now, we'll be talking about the same stuff. Geez, the Canadian Football League's still alive, but they lost a bunch of money. Like, yeah, but it's always been that way. And I'd love to see it different, but I don't think I ever will.
Yeah. Well, okay, we've seen Ottawa lose their franchise. We've seen Montreal lose their franchise. And then both of them came back.
Ottawa twice. Yeah.
But by your own acknowledgement, you know, Mr. Irving, that, you know, if the Toronto Argonauts packed up their tent, now you got a problem that we haven't seen before.
Yeah. Here's how naive I am, though. I think if the MLSC decides they don't want to be involved in the Argos anymore, I think somebody will ride to their rescue. How naive is that?
I think one of the owners of MLSE will run to the rescue because it protects them on the other side of the TV world. So as they owned it before. So
yeah, I know this is not a solution, but I just think the CFL will always find a way. They'll always find a way, re-ownership and all the rest of it. They'll muddle along. And yes, I would like to. I'd love to see it more successful and all the rest of it. But I know this. There are hundreds of thousands of people across this country who still love the league. And a lot of them are in the West. There's no doubt about it. But a lot of them are in Ottawa and Hamilton now. And they're in Montreal. And I don't know about Toronto. They're there if you can somehow root them out of their basements. And there's enough of them to make this thing work. And so I think it will always find a way to work. I believe that. I've always believed that, and I always will.
Okay, so before we let you go,
yeah.
And I know you've practiced this because all I hear about is tributes in the Free Press and CGOB for Bob Irving and the end of an era. Best player you ever saw?
With the Bombers or in the CFL?
Well, give me one of each then, quickly.
Well, Doug Flutie is the best player I've ever seen in this league. It's not even close. And I know the guys who go back to Jackie Parker, and I don't, would say Jackie Parker, but Doug Flutie is the best player that I've ever seen, the best Bomber. I didn't watch Kenny Plain because I got here, you know, his playing days were over. The best Bomber I've seen is Milt Stegall. Yeah. He was just, he was outstanding. He really was. But for me, it's Flutie and Milt Stegall.
All those people in Edmonton are going to be mad at you because I think that was the Edmonton team that won 5 in a row was the best team.
Yeah.
And Warren their Moon. Their quarterback was pretty damn good.
Yeah, well, Warren played 5 years, okay, and he was brilliant. No, and went to the NFL, and he's in the Hall of Fame and all the rest of it. I couldn't argue with him, John, but you're asking me. Flutie played, 8 or 9 years up here?
Yeah.
And there were nights when Flutie played that you knew he couldn't be beat. He just couldn't. He was going to win. I mean, Michael Shea was on two of those Toronto teams that were 15-3, and Flutie was the quarterback, and he said, we knew we were going to win because of Flutie. He was that good.
Well, so the final one from me. So as you get prepared for the last broadcast, you're spending more time thinking about that or thinking about and preparing for the broadcast itself?
Well, I'm spending more time thinking about it because people keep asking me about
it. Well, there you go.
Yeah. You know, I'm preparing the same way I prepare for every game, but I am thinking about it. How could I not? Right.
Of course.
I've been doing this for almost 50 years, and I've done between 800 and 900 games, and this is going to be one last game. And so I'm just going to try to go about my business all week and prepare the way I do and broadcast the game the way I would broadcast any game, although it'll be more exciting because it's a West final, Winnipeg, Saskatchewan, and all that stuff. And then when I sign off at the end of that broadcast, I don't quite know how I'm going to feel. There'll be some finality there to the whole thing. And, it could get emotional. I don't know, but I'm trying not to think about that right now.
Have you decided what you're going to say? What the last words are going to be?
I thought about it, but I think I'm going to script something. You know what Don Whitman said to me one time? He said, you know, Bob, the best ad libs that I've ever used are the ones I've written.
They're written down. That's right.
Well, no, what said that to me? I've always held that to my thought process when you're doing play-by-play, you can't script things, but I could script the last things I'm going to say on the air.
Of course you can.
And I just might do that.
Well, listen, we congratulate you on a tremendous career.
And
I know people in Winnipeg will be, and already are, very sad to see you announce your retirement, but you deserve the opportunity to do that. We wish you well down the road, and who knows, maybe our paths will cross once again somewhere in time. We thank you very much.
I hope so. Thank you, Bob. And thank you, John. I appreciate it.
All the best. Bob Cheers. Irving. We'll come back and wrap it after these messages. McCown and Shannon back with you. Our thanks again to Bob Irving. We wish him well in retirement. Although I suspect he will have the same kind of reaction to it as most people do. Like, I thought it would be better than this.
Well, he's got a
maybe
very
his wife will have a better reaction. You know,
you beat
get out of the house, go do something.
He has a very patient and loving wife. His lovely wife Day is one of the great people of all time. So they, I'm sure they'll have a great time. I'm gonna wait and get the neighbors to tell me when Bob buys that Winnebago, because we know he's not buying a plane. So
Yeah, I suspect vacations are going to be over land more often than by air.
Yeah.
Like going to Europe is going to be a bit of a challenge. Well, I could take a boat, I guess. Yeah. Do people still do that? Do people still take a boat across the Atlantic?
You can go on cruises that you leave from Miami and end up in the Mediterranean. Yeah.
No. Well, I know
what you're saying. New York to Southampton type thing, you know, like the trip of the Titanic type
Well,
thing.
That was my point. Like, I've been on a cruise before. A cruise, the boat basically swims around a little bit and comes back to where you left.
Yeah.
And you go for 3 or 4 days. You know yourself, before the advent of flying, you wanted to go from North America to Europe or wherever across an ocean, you took a boat. Yeah, that was the trip.
I don't even know if there is a standard booking that you can make from.
That's my point.
New York to Southampton. Why would you? You can get there in 5 hours.
Well, I don't know. Is there something enchanting or romantic about going across the North Atlantic? I mean, I took a cruise in the Caribbean.
Sure.
You know, they sailed at night, and when I woke up in the morning, they were in some port on some island, you know? I don't know. How long would that even take? Would it be more than a week, wouldn't it?
No, it wouldn't be a week. Four or five days.
Across the Atlantic?
4 or 5 days.
Really?
Yeah.
Based on what information are you saying that?
Gilligan's Island.
Gilligan's Island is great. Excuse me. Well, in the last few minutes here, with no disrespect intended.
By the way, it's 3 days. New York to London, 3 days.
There you go. 3.5 days, but to be accurate. Our august producer has done the research while we were sitting here talking. Yeah. I can't agree on the notion that there's nothing wrong with the CFL. Don't change anything. I think people who say that who are involved in the league will acknowledge the difficulties, but never want to see the game change. And I think there has to be a serious, serious conversation about making some changes, and they have to be fundamental. You know, I talked about the Canadian versus American thing. Do you have more Americans? Do you have, you know, more Canadians? Well, Bob didn't want to have either.
No, he wanted to protect Canadian. He just wanted to protect Canadian.
I said, do you want to increase the number of Canadians in the league? And he said, no.
Yeah. No,
he wanted to protect the number of Canadians that are in the league. Well, so yeah. Basically nobody wants to change anything.
I think this is Randy Ambrosi's biggest issue, is that there's a constituency within the CFL world that likes it the way it is. And at the same time, I think if Randy, who is a former CFL player, has trying to have some vision to make this league more stable, and so that we don't have these discussions on an annual basis. And I think that's maybe in many ways Randy's biggest problem.
Well, the other thing, you know, I know comparisons to the National Football League are never going to be favorable, but there was a long period of time when the Canadian Football League was struggling and tried to sell itself as the league that where you got more action, that the NFL was a rushing league and the Canadian League is a passing league.
And it was true.
And the offense, there was more offense in the CFL than there was in the NFL. And that was true. Well, that isn't true anymore. The NFL throws the ball all the time. Yeah. Running backs are essentially irrelevant for the most part. And scoring is higher in the National Football League than it is in the Canadian Football League overall. Yeah. Well, You can keep running the same play till you get it right, but they haven't gotten it right yet. And they got to make some change. And I think the change has got to be fundamental. Your thoughts?
But I mean, I'd love to know what your definition briefly of fundamental is. I mean, I don't think, I mean, listen.
Size of field. What are the fundamental differences? Size of field, four downs. Now.
Well, I'm not changing
either
of those things.
You want to still have a rouge? I'm good with that.
Yeah.
I'm good with that. You want to still have the defensive line play 1 yard off? I'm good with that. You want to eliminate fair catch and keep the 5 yard, you know, restraining area? I'm good with that. There are a lot of things that could still make this game unique and special, but I don't think you can't just throw up your hands and say, no, we're not going to change. That's just being stubborn and defiant in the face of economic reality.
Well, I actually think there are many ways. I think the CFL's tried to be too progressive, Bob. And I know you people are going to laugh at me when I say that. Like, for instance, I think that
I'm not laughing. I'm just puzzled. What do you mean?
Well, I think that they rely too much on video review and the amount of things that can be reviewed via coaching challenge. Like
But that's a television audience, John. That isn't putting butts in the seats. That's where the economics
I think it's,
are.
I think that's all part and parcel of the perception of the league. And I think there are some issues. Do I think there should be change? Yeah. Do I know what that change is? I don't. And I think and the other thing is there's nine teams and there's a commissioner's office. That means there's 10 divergent opinions about how to improve this game. And that's a problem.
And they're all and if they're not doing anything, they're all wrong. We could go on and on forever, but time is our enemy here. And at some point, remind me, we'll have this conversation again, because I got a whole bunch of other points that I wanted to make, but the clock is ticking. We'll come back and do something else tomorrow.
Baseball tomorrow.
All righty then. Hope you'll join us for that. Same time, same station. For John Shannon, Bob McCowan, see ya.